Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Good morning. We got an early morning pod for you guys, I'm starting to like doing these morning pods, but you guys know why we're here. This is after the Super Bowl. I'm gonna give you guys all my thoughts, my commentary, my analysis, what I thought of the game. Obviously, we're gonna have some legacy talk. The Chiefs, I would say, officially are a dynasty. 3 Super Bowls in 5 years. They got something cooking. Like I said, I'm gonna talk about both sides. The NFL season came to an end. Kinda, not really, because we're just like the off season has really turned into, you know, a show itself with the draft and the combine and so forth. So obviously we have that to worry about, you know, in the coming weeks and free agency and so forth. But gotta give you guys my thoughts on the game. That is why we're here. But first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that continue to show love to the pod. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate everything, the comments, the follows, the followings, and so forth. Make sure if you listen on Spotify, make sure you continue to make sure you follow the podcast. Make sure you get notifications. Perhaps leave a rating. Leave a comment. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. I sometimes even take suggestions and on topics. I answer questions if questions are asked. So greatly appreciate everything. Any type of participation. Let's just get right to the nitty gritty of it. This was a pretty good game. This is a really good game. I thought it was a well played game. Both defenses play really well. I would say throughout the game entirely, but there were stretches where both defenses was just putting on a clinic, right? And the offenses just couldn't do anything. So both defenses definitely came to play. It was the most watched Super Bowl, so highest rated Super Bowl ever. And the ratings all throughout the postseason has been great. I will say this, the Niners, in the first half, the Niners pass rush in the first half gave me, and probably Patrick Mahomes, kind of 2021 vibes with the Buccaneers, in that Tampa Bay Super Bowl. Nick Bosa and that defensive line of San Francisco was getting after it. And it looked lively. Like, this is the best that they have played in some time. I mean, like I said, coming into the game, the Niners, or dating back to, you know, the NFC Championship game, the Niners offensive, their defensive line was just getting pushed around by Detroit. And the mere fact that they were able to come out, they had Mahomes a little rattled, I would say. I'm not even gonna say rattle, but they had him moving out of the pocket. The pocket wasn't clean. And it just wasn't comfortable football for Kansas City offensively in the first half overall. I mean, you could just look at the first 9 possessions for Kansas City. You get 5 punts, 2 field goals, and 2 turnovers. And that was a huge stretch. Now on the flip side with Kansas City, their defense, everybody's going to talk about the greatness of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Travis Kelce, rightfully so. I totally understand that. I'm going to do the same. But I think they're so great. Mahomes is so great. And we think of Kansas City like being offensively geared. I told you guys coming into this game, this defense is what's going, that's the unit that's going to win them this game. And lo and behold, it did. The defense came to play as well. Now, granted, the 49ers, they're a talented group with great play calling. So there were going to be stretches where the Niners were going to move the ball up and down the field. And they did. They did. The Niners had drives and possessions where they moved the ball up the field. But as I told you guys, first 9 possessions for Kansas City offensively was It was like they were sleepwalking. And I think Spags, Steve Spagnuolo, and what he's been able to do with this defense with Chris Jones, Trent McDuffie, Chris Jones and Trent McDuffie were the two most integral parts of Kansas City's defense in that Super Bowl. Trent McDuffie's, his snaps in the slot and coverage, absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome, right? Chris Jones blew up a couple plays, forced Brock Purdy to miss a couple of wide open throws, throws that he would have hit if his offensive line didn't forget to block the best defensive tackle in the game, right? So all of that, we get a first half of nip and tuck and really, really defensive oriented. I would say both defenses got the best of the offenses in the first half. Christian McCaffrey had a fumble. Mahomes had an interception. Kansas City had two turnovers, actually, with Isaiah Pacheco in the red zone. He fumbled. So both defenses really got the best of both offenses in the first half, I would say. And then I would say a momentum kind of, and here's where, and as we get, as I go further and further into the pod and I talk about Kyle Shanahan, I'll bring it up again. But I thought the play calling in the third quarter for the 49ers offensively, I was not in love with it. I felt like they got very pass happy. And that's what I told you guys in the previous pod, in my prediction episode. I talked about, hey, Kyle has a tendency, whether it's coming into the game, like at the start of the game or at the beginning of halves or quarters, where he gets a little pass happy. He gets a little trigger happy with, he starts throwing the football all across the field, and he sometimes forget that he has Christian McCaffrey and he has one of the best blocking tight ends in football along with Trent Williams. So we could always nip and tuck with play calling. It's a really hard job, but I feel like in the third quarter, the Niners really could have blew the game open. Like, there were opportunities where they could have blew the game open, and they didn't, right? And I think so many times people point to a play or two and be like, that was a difference maker. And it's like, sure, those were big plays, but in a game like this, there is a collection of plays that decide the game, right? Like I said, obviously, there were turnovers on both sides. Both defenses were playing, but eventually the offenses woke up. I would say that, you know, special team-wise, Kansas City, they had the edge. And, you know, coming into the game, you know, Jake Moody, you know, he's had an up-and-down season and so forth. But he was fine. It was the muff punt and then the block extra point, right? The block extra point was huge. That was huge. No, I feel like that's not getting talked about enough. That was huge. The block extra point, actually, it made overtime possible. Because if the extra point wasn't blocked, it would, instead of a three-point game, it would have been a four-point game. And Kansas City couldn't have settled for a field goal to tie the game because actually they would have needed a touchdown. So like that extra point was huge. That was a huge part of the game. But you can't, like in these big time games, I feel like we people try to pinpoint a play here and there that changes the game. And in football, you just can't do that. It's hard to do that, right? I think Dre Greenlaw, I think his injury was huge. His replacement did not play well, especially in pass coverage, right? So, like, and I kind of felt bad for Dre Greenlaw right there, popping his Achilles the way he did. Anytime you see an Achilles injury, it's like, ouch. But then it wasn't even in the field of play. It wasn't during a play. He was just literally running out onto the field as the 49ers defense was going back out there, and he just pops his Achilles. So that was, I thought that was huge. I thought the Niners, his presence was definitely missed. As I told you guys, Fred Warner is their best linebacker, but Dre Greenlaw he's their enforcer. He's the guy that kind of goes over the line, right? He's the guy that likes to hit. He's a thumper. So, you know, like I said, I think the third quarter to me really stood out. Like I said, the 49ers and Kyle, they got really pass happy. And this kind of gave Kansas City some momentum going into the fourth eventually. So overall, it was a great game. I'm not going to just pick out one play or two plays that like changed the game. But obviously, in this type of game, there is a series of moments that happen, that take place, that kind of alter the game. Like I said, the extra point was huge. I thought some of the third down conversions on both sides, you know, the play calling, last four drives for the Chiefs, they went touchdown, field goal, touchdown. And the play calling, I feel like, in the latter part of the fourth quarter and overtime, it got really creative. I love that Andy Reid kept the ball in Mahomes' hands. It was really crafty. And obviously, to win the game, they ran the same play that they ran last year to win the Super Bowl. So they're going to continue to feed families off that play. That concept, Doug Peterson, obviously Doug Peterson is from the Andy Reid tree. So it's no surprise that, you know, it's a copycat league. No surprise that they're going to use similar concepts. But that scheme, that play is so many. I've seen so many variations of it. I've seen it at the college level from Steve Sarkisian, from Sark. But Doug Peterson, it was his bread and butter it was the way he beat Philly the year before last. And then obviously Kansas City used that in the Super Bowl versus Philly. And it's an awesome man beating concept. And then once again, Andy pulls it out again and Mecole Hardman was wide open. That scheme, that's going to feed families for generations. I mean, it's always open. It's just always open, especially against man. It's a great man-to-man beating concept. And the crazy part about this Super Bowl, this game in Kansas City, it kind of speaks to the greatness of how really good this team is. In all of their Super Bowls, they've been outplayed for all of their Super Bowls. For even the ones that they won, obviously the Tampa Bay Super Bowl, they got outplayed because and they lost. But even in the three Super Bowl wins, the two versus the 49ers and last year versus the Eagles, you can make an argument that they got outplayed and they were the inferior team. And then Mahomes in the last, and you know, these latter part, the clutch moments in the fourth quarter, he just takes over and he was phenomenal. He's spectacular. And you look at a guy like Brock Purdy. I like Brock Purdy. I think I'm one of the biggest Brock Purdy fans. And he played pretty well. I think Brock Purdy, for the most part, for a guy his age, the circumstances, thought he played well. I thought Brock Purdy played well. But when you're sharing the field with Patrick Mahomes, Brock Purdy just playing well, it just gets tainted. Because Mahomes, the gap between him and Brock Purdy, as you saw, is wide. It is wide. There is a gap. But many think that, put this out here. A lot of people, in terms of building a Super Bowl roster, the old-fashioned have a rookie quarterback on his rookie deal, rookie pay scale, so he don't take up as much cap space, and then use the remaining cap space to buffer your roster, on both sides of the ball. The 49ers have done that as just about as well as anybody. And like the 49ers, that roster, that's as good as it gets. And they outplayed Kansas City for, I would say, for the most part of that game. And Brock Purdy played well. None of it mattered. None of it mattered. And that kind of shows Patrick Mahomes. That kind of, like, that's MJ-esque. That's Michael Jordan-esque. And I've been saying it for some time, since 2019, since I started this podcast, literally, that Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan-esque. When I see Patrick Mahomes, I see Michael Jordan. That's literally what I see. And for me, I don't know, but I think for me and a lot of people that was watching at home, and including some of the 49er players and the coaching staff, once they kicked that field goal and went up 19-16, and they left a minute and 53 seconds left, I think it was never a doubt that Mahomes was going to score. Now, it was just a matter of, is he going to score 3 or 7? But for me, it was never a doubt that he was going to score. It was just a matter of how much. And Michael had that same, you had that same eerie feeling about Michael. Now, I'm just going to engage in this type of conversations, because I usually don't. I usually don't like the conversations. I think these type of conversations can be really toxic in sports discourse. But let me participate in the toxicity today, because I do want to properly, if we're going to have these conversations, I think we should have them correctly. Now, I've been telling you guys, I think Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback ever. I think he's the best quarterback I have ever seen, right? And when people are having these conversations about Brady and Mahomes, and then they compare the two between Brady and Mahomes and LeBron and MJ, I think it's the wrong comparison. I think it's absolutely the wrong comparison. The right comparison, I'm going to give you guys the right comparison. The right comparison is actually Bill Russell and MJ. When talking about Brady and Mahomes, the correct comparison is Bill Russell and MJ. Let me tell you why. Brady got the 7 rings, right? The 7 rings kind of seem untouchable. I don't know. Maybe Mahomes can do it. Maybe he can't. I probably bet that he won't, but who knows? Seen crazier things. And the Bill Russell, his 11 rings seem untouchable. Like, I don't think no one's getting that. But people were already calling Michael Jordan the GOAT after his 3rd ring. Like, it was universally recognized that, okay, this is the best basketball player we've ever seen after his 1st 3-peat. That was the general consensus. After the 1st 3-peat, Magic hadn't done it, Kareem hadn't done it, Wilt didn't do it, Bird didn't do it. At that point, enough was said, enough. We didn't need to see no more. He was universally recognized as the greatest player ever in basketball, right? So it's not all about the championships, because that wasn't the case for MJ. Because as we saw, Bill Russell, he had 8 more championships than MJ. So it wasn't like it was about, can MJ catch Bill Russell? Like, no, that wasn't the conversation. That was not the conversation. We had seen MJ. We had seen nothing like him. And we crowned him the GOAT. So it's not just about rings. And with Brady, I think with Brady, granted, Brady has the 7 rings, but we have seen Patrick Mahomes do things that we haven't seen before. Like, literally. And it's not about the rings. I think it's a combination of rings. Obviously, you have to have the championships, right? But then it's eye tests. And then obviously, we're going to, you know, stats matter. Like, statistical output matters. So I think it's a combination of those 3 things. So when people are having, is, you know, Brady and Mahomes with LeBron, and like, that's not the same. That's not the correct comparison. The actual correct comparison, if you want to do a cross sport comparison with Brady and Mahomes, is actually Bill Russell and Michael Jordan, right? It's Bill Russell and Michael Jordan. That's the proper comparison for Brady and Mahomes. Brady is the most accomplished, but granted, Brady, I think some of his physical attributes get played down, but Brady is not Mahomes. Brady is not Mahomes. And in terms of physical abilities, physical capabilities, Brady is not Mahomes, right? So the eye test, Mahomes passed it. Like, we've seen it. And that's the thing with Jordan. It wasn't about the rings. Granted, yes, the championships mattered to a degree, but it wasn't about the rings. It was about what we saw with the eye test. And that's the same thing with Mahomes. Yes, granted, it is about the ring. Like, some of it, yes, you have to win championships. If you want to be universally recognized, yes, championships matter. But it's not the end-all, be-all. So when people have this conversation between, can Mahomes catch up to Brady, excuse me? It's not about Mahomes catching up to Brady. He doesn't need to catch up. He doesn't need to catch up. For me, Mahomes, he can go his entire career and not ever win a Super Bowl again. I still think he's the best ever. I don't think that's going to happen. But I still think he's the best ever. So it's the wrong comparison. LeBron and MJ is the wrong comparison for Brady Mahomes. The correct and the proper comparison for Brady and Mahomes, if you want to do a cross sports reference, it's actually Russell and MJ. It's Bill Russell and MJ. That's the proper comparison. So hopefully people will I know it won't stop. People will continue to have the sports discourse about Brady Mahomes, MJ, LeBron, but it's actually the wrong comparison in actuality. Because when we're having the Jordan and LeBron debate, people talk about the rings. We're counting rings. And that wasn't the case 30 years ago when we proclaimed Michael Jordan as a GOAT. That wasn't the case. We had seen enough. We had saw it with our eyes. People had seen it with their eyes. And they said, yes, this is the greatest basketball player ever. It was never about the rings. The rings helped the argument. Just like Mahomes, the rings helps the argument. It strengthens the argument. But it's not all about the rings. It's what we're seeing him do. It's the eye test. And then the stats and the rings strengthen the argument. That is why Patrick Mahomes is MJ. And that's why the right comparison is Russell MJ, if we're talking Brady and Mahomes. So let's move on. I'm gonna dive into Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers aspect of this. And I know Kyle Shanahan's been getting killed. So I'm gonna take a quick break and I'll come right back. We're gonna get into Kyle Shanahan and my thoughts on the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan as a whole. Now let's dive into the Kyle Shanahan discourse. And I'll say this. I think there has been, after the conclusion of the Super Bowl, as I told you guys, I think in the third quarter, Kyle play calling was a little peculiar. I thought he got away from the run game and became really pass happy. So I was not a fan of the heavy passing in the third quarter. But Kyle Shanahan is a smart guy. I'm sure he could probably defend that. I'm sure he can probably defend some of those play calls. Now, we can nitpick play calling. Play calling is really hard. It's really, really hard. And as I told you guys, looking at the defensive side of the ball with the 49ers, Kyle, there was clearly a disconnect between Kyle and Steve Wilks. Because there was a time in the game where Kyle had to call a timeout because I think he didn't agree with the defensive look and what was called on the field. And the biggest moment in the biggest stage of the sport, you just can't have that. There's obviously some, there was some connection issue. There was some type of issue that happened, and Cal did not agree with the call, didn't like the look. And this kind of goes to show you that being a play caller is hard, even when you have pretty good talent. Because you look at the Niners defensively, as I told you guys, D'Amico Ryans, Robert Saleh, these guys were high-end defensive coordinators. And for Steve Wilks, he's just not the same caliber defensive coordinator. And some of it is the play calling. The Niners defense go as that defensive line goes. So if the defensive line is balling, and if they're, you know, if they're getting to the quarterback, they're generating pressure, and Fred Warner makes every tackle, 49ers defense looks pretty good. But there are some times, there is times where the 49ers defense, especially in the secondary, coverages get busted and guys don't look like they're in position to make plays. And that shows you how hard play calling can be. So I'm not going to get on Kyle about the play calling, right? Like I said, I'm not a fan of the third quarter play calling, but that's a minor issue. In some ways, and I've made this same comparison, funny enough, in some ways, Kyle Shanahan is somewhat the modern-day version of Andy Reid. And let me explain. Prior to Andy Reid winning the Super Bowls, all of the takes you're hearing about Kyle, all of the takes that you're hearing about Kyle Shanahan, I am old enough to remember people saying the same thing about Andy Reid. People had the same notions, the same narratives about Andy Reid because he couldn't win a big game, couldn't win Super Bowls, right? That was the notion until he got his hands on Patrick Mahomes, he started winning Super Bowls. But Andy Reid has always been a high-end offensive play caller, and he's won a lot of ball games, and he just couldn't get over the hump. And with Cal, and that's fair. Like, it's fair to a degree. You look at guys like a Mike Tomlin, a Pete Carroll, a John Harbaugh, you know, many people question like, hey, is this guy? And their trump card they can always pull, their ace that they always have in their back pocket is, I have a Super Bowl. I have a Super Bowl ring, right? Like, doesn't matter. John Harbaugh, a lot of people, I know some Raven fans that wanted John Harbaugh gone. I know some Raven fans that wanted John Harbaugh gone. And John Harbaugh, I think he's a pretty good coach. But you know what his trump card is? I have a Super Bowl. But that was like 10 years ago. I have a Super Bowl. Mike McCarthy, everybody, you know, we question Mike McCarthy. And, you know, he gets killed for his clock management, his clock mismanagement, and, you know, game plan-wise, everybody kills him. But you know what he can fall back on? I have a Super Bowl. But that was with Aaron Rodgers 15 years ago. I have a Super Bowl. That is the falling call. That is the ace in the back pocket that they can pull out at all times. Mike Tomlin, doesn't matter how mediocre the Steelers are, you know, haven't won playoff game in years. Guess what? I have a Super Bowl. So, and that's Kyle has yet to get over that hump. Now, here, I'm gonna give some criticism that I think is fair. The first criticism that I think is fair is the players did not know the overtime rules. And that falls completely on Kyle Shanahan. It's just no way around it. The players, the 49ers players, did not know the rules of overtime. Hell, most of you guys watching at home probably didn't know the overtime rules. I had to explain the people that I was watching the game with. I had to explain the overtime rules, right? They're new rules. But Kyle Shanahan, as anytime you're the manager, supervisor, I don't care if you're the CEO or the head coach, a head football coach, a great portion of your job is preparing those under you for the unknown or in situations like this. so you can, you know, mitigate mistakes and not knowingness and ignorance, right? That is a big part of the job. Point in case, this is why Bill Belichick gets so much love, because former players come out, former coaches come out, and they always talk about how prepared the Patriots were. They were prepared for every situation. They were prepared for every ebb and flow of the game. That is what, that's part of the reason why a lot of people think think so highly of Bill Belichick and think he's the greatest coach of all time, because of the prep, the preparation. He always, the Patriots always were ready for any and every situation, point blank period. That falls on Kyle Shanahan, right? That falls on Kyle Shanahan. You have to know the rules. And going into the overtime, it didn't seem like the 49ers had an actual plan. The Chiefs had a plan. If the Chiefs would have won the coin toss, I think the 49ers, they said tails. It was tails. So they took the ball. But if the Chiefs would have won the coin toss, the Chiefs would have deferred. They would have given the ball to the 49ers. And at that point, the Chiefs knew, if the 49ers score a touchdown, we're going to score a touchdown, and we're going to go for two, and we're going to end the game on our own terms. That was the Chiefs' game plan. And unlike the 49ers, they knew the overtime rules. They actually been preparing for situations just like this. Just like this. Now, I know some people are like, the Niners should have kicked the ball. They shouldn't have received it first. I think it's kind of hard, because this is the first time that the rule has actually been like, we actually get to see it. So there's not enough like numbers or like different situations and variables to really match this up to, but it's a lot that goes into it. I was thinking about it myself. I'm like, what, like variables, obviously, like both offenses, you know, defenses being gassed, offensive being gassed, what quarterback you're playing, what your offense looks like, what quarterback, like it's just so many variables. But with the Niners electing to get the ball in this particular situation, it somewhat put them at a disadvantage. And like I said, the logic of getting the ball first just doesn't make sense. Because get this, in theory, the advantage that going first gives you is, you know, let's say both offenses are cooking, right? And the defenses are gassed. The defense can't get a stop. Well, you electing to get the ball first, you're like, I want the ball first. So you score a touchdown, and then you assume that the other team is going to score a touchdown, so you get the ball third. And that's what Kyle Shanahan said. He said, we wanted to get the ball third. But if both offenses are cooking, and if both offenses score a touchdown, the second team that got the ball, the Chiefs, why wouldn't they just go for two? They would go for two, and they would just end the game on their own terms. Now, you know, whether or not they get it, but assuming that both offenses are getting or are cooking and both offenses are putting up points, you would assume that they would get the two. And with Kansas City, that was going to be their plan. So Cal's strategy wouldn't have worked, because even if the 49ers would have scored a touchdown and then the Chiefs go down and score a touchdown, the Chiefs, I mean, maybe Kyle's strategy would have worked, because maybe the 49ers get a stop on a two-point conversion. But I'm betting that the Chiefs probably get the two-point conversion and they still end up winning the game despite Kyle's strategy. So all of it in itself, it just didn't make sense. And I don't think the 49ers properly thought out, what if the game goes to overtime and we have to play under the new overtime rules? What is our strategy? And it looked like on the other side with Kansas City, they understood the assignment. They had a strategy. They knew exactly what they were going to do. And that kind of shows the experience gap. Kyle, I think Kyle's like 44, 45. Andy is 20 years older. And Andy has been in this league for a long time, and he's been in these type of situations and so forth. So that's one criticism that's fair. Another criticism that I deem fair is Cal and his quarterback evaluation. Let me explain. Andy Reid, I think Andy, a lot of people are so high on Andy Reid, including myself, and it's now becoming a debate. Is Andy Reid the greatest football coach ever? And a lot of that has to do with him winning 3 Super Bowls. But the way how Andy Reid, I think another part of it is we've seen Andy Reid win with a multitude of quarterbacks. A multitude of quarterbacks, right? Like, you know, if I'm really having a debate between Belichick or Andy Reid, I would always pull out that Andy Reid. I've seen Andy Reid win. I've seen him win a lot of games with other quarterbacks outside of Patrick Mahomes. Hasn't won a Super Bowl, but I've seen him win a lot of games. I've seen him win a lot of games and get to a Super Bowl with Donovan McNabb. I've seen him win. I've seen him go to a bunch of NFC Championship games with Donovan McNabb. I've seen him win games with Michael Vick. I've seen him win games with Alex Smith. I've seen him dominate a division and win 10, 11 games on a yearly basis with Alex Smith. With Bill Belichick, that can't be said. He's tied. Belichick's success is tied to Tom Brady, one player. With Andy, granted, I think he became a living legend once he started winning Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes. But a lot of Andy's success is not tied to Mahomes. All of his success is not tied to Mahomes. So that's the first thing. But Andy's also not just winning with different quarterbacks, but his ability to adapt and properly evaluate the quarterback spot, it takes Andy to a whole nother level. And with Kyle Shanahan, this quarterback situation with the 49ers, and I'm not, like I said, I like Brock Purdy, and Brock Purdy played well. But think back, the 2017 draft, Kyle Shanahan could have taken Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. He didn't, because his reasoning was, you know, he felt like the 49ers had more, he had different, you know, had bigger needs. And he was confident that the 49ers would eventually sign Kirk Cousins in free agency. Well, that didn't happen. They didn't sign Kirk Cousins. Instead, they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. And I would argue that he's a lesser version of Kirk Cousins. So he didn't take Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson because he thought he was going to sign Kirk Cousins, but didn't sign Kirk Cousins. So then he traded for Jimmy Garoppolo, who's a lesser version of Kirk Cousins. Cool. Then gets to the Super Bowl, lose the Super Bowl. Couple years fast forward, he realizes that these limited pocket game manager quarterbacks aren't enough to get him over the hump. So in the 2021 draft, he's looking to draft a quarterback. But the quarterback that he likes fits the prototype that he's trying to move off of. He liked Mac Jones. He wanted Mac Jones. It took the 49ers front office, John Lynch, to step in and say, we're drafting Trey Lance. But Mac Jones was the guy that Kyle Shanahan liked and wanted, right? We don't know how that's going to play out. We don't know how that would have played out, but my guess, it probably would have ended up similar to the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, right? Whatever. Trey Lance don't work out because ultimately it doesn't work out, but one could argue, I mean, we're not at the practice, but one could argue that Kyle never really wanted him. And now we're here with Brock Purdy, and we'll see where it goes. But I think just the evaluation of the quarterback spot and how he's handled the quarterback spot, I definitely think is really concerning. It's definitely concerning. And when you look at Andy, he's a great play caller. But he can be hands off with Mahomes because he trusts Mahomes to operate and control the offense. And as I said, Andy has turned into a legend for his ability to adapt with different styles of quarterbacks and still being able to win. And with Cal, he has to get over that hump. He has to get over that hump. Now, here's one thing that I don't think is fair. To say that Cal blew 3 Super Bowls, I think is a bit outrageous. And I know people are like, well, he was the offensive coordinator for Atlanta. Yes, but to say he blew 3 Super Bowls is crazy. You can blame him for 2 Super Bowls. But I have never seen another coach escape and go blameless for such a huge loss the way Dan Quinn has escaped. And he's like, has. I mean, it is crazy to me that no, like, I think if you would have asked, like, a casual football fan that watches here and there, who was the head? They probably don't even know that Dan Quinn was the head coach of that Falcons team. But everybody acts like I'm not saying he shouldn't get blamed for it, right? I'm not saying he shouldn't get some criticism for it. But everybody acts like he was the head coach. For instance, Pete Carroll is a defensive guy, just like Dan Quinn. So he has no control over the offensive play calling. He does not do that. But Pete Carroll is the same guy that gets killed for that play call that cost the Seahawks the Super Bowl versus the Patriots. That play where Russell Wilson throws the pick to Malcolm Butler and the Patriots end up winning the Super Bowl, Pete Carroll gets so much heat. And from ex-players to coaches to everybody kills Pete Carroll for that play call. Right? Everybody kills him for it. Everybody kills him. But no, I guarantee you, most of you guys can't even name who the offensive coordinator was that year for the Seahawks. That year for the Seahawks in 2014, I bet you can't even name the offensive coordinator. Because guess what? No, you know why? You know why? Because it never gets discussed. It never gets discussed. And I'm looking it up now. Darrell Purvell, it was the offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl, for that 2014 Seahawks team. He was the offensive coordinator. But it never gets discussed. And for a guy like Dan Quinn, no one discusses Dan Quinn's role and that Falcons loss in the Super Bowl. Everybody talks about Kyle Shanahan. So I do think that is a little unfair. I do think that's a little unfair because if we're gonna use that type of logic and play that type of blame game, then we have that has to be applied across the board. That has to be applied all across the board. Like I said, I'm not saying Kyle shouldn't be criticized or critiqued for that Super Bowl loss. But to act like he was the head coach of the Falcons and he gets the most heat for that loss, absolutely not. We got to stop that. I don't think that's fair, right? But the other 2 points that I pointed out that's at play, I think it's a fair criticism about Kyle and him not being able to win the big game. I think that's a fair criticism about Kyle. He has to get over that hump. He's a great coach. 2 things can be true. He can be a great offensive play caller, great coach, but in terms of winning the big game and having his team button up, his team wasn't buttoned up. There were some special team blunders. There were some penalties, right? And they did not know the overtime rules. That is a fair criticism. He has to be better in these big moments. He has to have his team better in these big moments. And I'm not going to say the 49ers can't win big games because the NFC Championship, it's a pretty big game. You know, in order to get to the Super Bowl, you have to play in big games. So I'm not going to say they can't win big games. Kyle Shanahan just haven't won the big game. He hasn't won the big game. And eventually, I think Kyle Shanahan, he'll get over the hump. He'll get over the hump, and I think eventually he'll win a Super Bowl. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's a really good coach. But he got out-coached by Andy Reid, who is obviously one of the best coaches in football history. And we're, you know, I continue to have conversations and discussions about, you know, where does Andy Reid stack up, later in the, you know, later in the week and, you know, pods, you know, some later pods, but this is what it is. Kyle got to get over that hump, but I'm going to end this pod right here. This is going to be part one. I'm going to have a part two to my analysis, you know, further talk, you know, talking about, you know, Kansas City's legacy, Mahomes, Andy Reid and so forth. But just thought I'd give you guys some content right after the Super Bowl. But I hope you guys enjoy. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Peace, deuces. I am out.